Hey friends, this is Gideon Tsang. I am one of the pastors here at Vox Veniae. And before you listen to the homily, we just want to invite you to consider partnering with us. And so we've been using a plant metaphor. So when you grow a plant, you start in a smaller container, and then so it can form and mature slowly. And so we've had this beautiful container, we've called it Space 12, and our roots have gently formed. And in 12 years, lots of exciting things have happened there. We've hosted nonprofits, advocacy groups, school coalitions, neighborhood associations, artists, poets, musicians. And then in July, we actually bought a building. It's just 3 blocks from Space 12, and I think we can form deeper roots. We're super excited. And so in this Advent season, we're just going to ask a couple times, will you partner with us? Will you, or maybe you can ask friends, perhaps family members, to partner with us as we finish up renovations. So what's super cool is that we have some generous donors. They're going to match our gifts at 100%. So if you want to, say, give a gift of $1,000, it'll be matched. Boom, $1,000. If someone else wants to offer $10, boom, $10. And so it's a gentle ask. Will you consider inviting your friends and family to partner with us? If you want to find out more, you can check out roots.voxveniae.com. And we pray that your season of Advent will be rest-filled and deeply meaningful. And I know some of you have journeyed with us from really close by, and some of you are from across the world. And so we're really thankful. Thank you for your partnership. We're grateful for your generosity, and enjoy the homily. Thank you.
Welcome. Welcome, everybody. So we're in our third week of a series on rootedness, and we've kind of looked at what does it mean to be attached, to put down roots in a community. We've looked at what it means to consent to rootedness and how when we sink into community, it kind of starts to bring up some of our work, some of our wounds, some of the things in us that need to be healed, and how as a community we want to make space to work with that that comes up and to see that healed, whether that's through talking about it or breaking walls. We've also been looking at what it means to kind of see life and some of the failures we experience as an opportunity to sink our roots down, and over time to see how that actually generates love and peace and faithfulness and joy in our lives. But today we're going to actually lean into the ways rootedness kind of cultivates intimacy with God over time. And I just want to say, and this is some of the art that Tim has graced us with, is the next phase of our four icons. The intimacy is really complicated. Over the years, I've personally seen different spiritual directors and therapists. And a lot of times I'll go in and they'll say, well, what do you want to work on? And I'll say, well, I'd really like to have more intimacy in my life. I'd really like to, you know, feel closer, more connected in my relationship with God. And almost every time, I think it's like a train. And now I say this to people, they'll say, you know, all the struggles, the conflicts, the feelings of absence, the loneliness, all of this are part of intimacy. You're doing it. And I'm like, great. But it's not the intimacy I want right now. And so, of course, you may not even be sure if God exists, or you might feel a distance in that relationship with God. Or maybe you're in a season of sweetness and gratitude. And I want to say that every place we're in right now is part of intimacy, if that makes sense. So I want to kind of start us off with a question, as is our custom, which is around this question of intimacy. So when you think about intimacy, what words or images arise, especially when you think about intimacy with God? And so if you're comfortable, maybe take a risk and share a little bit of that with someone sitting next to you. No, go, go. Go for it. I know we're diving in the deep end. We're just going to go for it. So now that we've all been kind of thrown into the deep end of the pool, what were some words that stand out for you when you think about intimacy with God? Peace? What else?
Openness.
Openness? Surrender? Confusion. Yeah. Vulnerability. Anything else? So intimacy, I think that's alive and growing, will continue to change. And so I had an experience this weekend around an intimacy in my life that changed. About 12 years ago, I had the good fortune of being a part of like a conference when we lived in the Northwest, and I was on a panel, and I got to kind of sit on a stage with an author that I really respect, and I really admired him. And then about two nights ago, I got invited to a dinner as part of this New Story Festival that's happened this weekend, is going to happen in March. And I realized, oh, this person's going to be there. And I got nervous because it was like a small group, right? Do you get, like, if you think of someone you admire, do you get a little nervous if you think about being around them? Isn't it weird? They're just people, right? But for whatever reason, I'm sure if you have an explanation, please tell me later. So this is like the person, this is Brian McLaren. He's an author. He's written a lot of books. I did wake up and wonder, I hope he's not here today. I don't see you, but if you are, don't say hi to me after the thing. Just quietly, no, just kidding. I was like, I may be creating my new most embarrassing moment. But anyway, so he was there, and I get weird around people who I admire. And we had this kind of time where we had dinner and had this gathering around these fires, and then someone told a story. And then at the end, we just had time where we could hang out, and I thought, oh, this is an opportunity just to kind of to interact with someone I respect. I admire their work. And so as soon as the story time ended, I was like, okay, here's my opportunity. So I got my coat, and I got up, and I immediately left and went to my car. So I was like, oh, this feels too vulnerable. And so I got to my car, and I kind of just stood there, and I was like, this is silly. I have time. I have energy. It's no big deal. So I went back in and kind of gathered my courage, and I just had a conversation. I was like, hey, how's it going? How was your drive? You know, like we were just talking like as people do. And I realized as I kind of relaxed that my relationship had changed. Like, you know, the first time I met, I wasn't able to really say anything, so I totally ignored him. And then this time I was like, oh, like you're just a person. And then the next day we were in a big group and got asked to pair up with someone we didn't know. And guess who my talk buddy was? And he asked the question we were supposed to ask, like, why are you here? And I said, well, I'm a part of a community in Austin where a lot of people have kind of deconstructed some of their containers in life and faith. And it's very vulnerable to try to reconstruct something. So this, to me, is really exciting because it's one of the few resources that I've seen in the area that is really supporting that kind of work. And he's like, yeah, it's really vulnerable, isn't it? I said, yeah, it is. It's really vulnerable. And so over time, like, he became just a person, and I became less of kind of a weird fan. Unless you're here, in which case, I'm very sorry. Anyway, we should move on, just out of respect for Brian. But our story today shows how being rooted in community allows our relationship with God to change over time. And we see in our story today how Jesus invites his students into the space of mutuality and friendship. And my hope today is that we'll relax into this invitation of love and explore what it means to trust God and ourselves in times that make, I think, all of this very difficult. Trust itself, I think, right now is very difficult. to say the least. So I want to invite us to read aloud together from John's Gospel, as is our custom with the people sitting next to you. So right off, we see that rootedness invites us into love. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. Sink into it. The core of our faith is we are being invited into love itself. We are being accepted. Like right now, you're being accepted. Even if you don't feel it or know it, like God is actively accepting every part of who we are. And as a community, we really have this sense that the acceptance we're holding with each other is so big, we don't have to control it or own it in any way. Like, you don't have to figure it out or nail it down. God's love is so big, you don't even have to believe God exists to benefit from it. That's pretty amazing. And Jesus is saying that you and I are being wrapped up, we're being embraced in this kind of pervasive love. Perhaps one of the hardest things I've noticed as I sit with people as a spiritual director now, and probably in thousands of hours of holding space, one of the hardest things we have trouble with as humans is accepting ourselves, accepting our lives. Does that surprise you at all? Is that pretty, it's like a known thing maybe? I'm just saying. When I was in school for massage therapy several years ago in another life, I was at my very first class. We went to a retreat center and we were doing massage therapy on people we had never met before for the first time. And during one of our breaks, we gathered around and our instructor said, "How did it go?" And one of the students said, "Well, I was working on someone and they started talking about wanting to change something in their life. And I wondered how I could help them, like how I could help them change." And this instructor, who I think was very wise, she just got very quiet and she just kind of looked past us, you know, like out into the distance, like she was gathering wisdom to speak from, I think. And after like a really uncomfortable silence, she just said, "You know, I don't think anyone is able to change anything without a significant period of acceptance and exploring something and why it's there. Because it's there for a reason, and until we understand that, we're bound to just keep repeating it." I thought that's pretty profound, because my tradition said anytime you find something you don't like about yourself, you just got to cut it out and get accountability and pray it away. And then it turns out it just shows up a few years later and you're like, "I thought I was healed. I thought we fixed this." So I think if shame and guilt were going to change us for the better, it probably would have happened by now. So this acceptance, I think, is a wonderful way to understand what Jesus is talking about with the kind of love that we're leaning into. Like, we're learning to accept the parts of ourselves that we don't know what to do with. He says, "If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." So in Jesus' culture and time, a teacher taking you in as a student and giving you guidance, giving you commands, like, this was a profound honor. You would have been like, "Oh, great, thank you." It was not a way to control you, which I think sometimes when I read this language, I feel like, it was an invitation. They would have leaned in rather than been repulsed, I think, as many of us are when we think about someone trying to command or ask us for obedience. So a better way to really convey the meaning of the passage would be to say it this way. "If you keep my invitations, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's invitations and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my invitation, that you love one another as I have loved you." So we're being invited over and over again into a full acceptance of every aspect of our humanity, every bit. which kind of reminds me, y'all probably can tell from the last couple of weeks, I've been listening to old sermons of Nadia Boltz-Weber, who I think is pretty amazing. And she was talking about this kind of acceptance a couple of years ago around a wedding she went to. So I'm going to read her words. "Some of you know I preached at a dear friend's wedding yesterday in Princeton, and it was for sure worthy of a highlight reel. Everyone was looking their very best. But given the fact that we live in a fallen world, I was looking around wondering if dressing up for weddings is the best idea. I mean, maybe instead of dressing up and looking our best, our very best at our weddings, it might make more theological sense if we just rolled out of bed and showed up totally as is. Sleep in our eyes, sporting morning halitosis, and that ripped shirt we still have from college. That would just be more realistic. Because in the end, as much as I'd love it if the highlight reel of our shiniest, most spiffied up moments were only what defined us, they're not. I mean, moments like weddings and baptisms and college graduations, moments of beauty and celebration are important. But again, if we choose to think theologically, these moments are no less important in defining us than are our times of failure and need." So I heard that, and then I was officiating a wedding that week. And I thought, I'll just say that at the wedding. So I don't know that it went well. Because it was one of the most beautiful weddings I've officiated. And I told them, "You guys look really beautiful and amazing. And it's really great that you dressed up. But the nature of God's love is to embrace us at our worst, our most prickly and difficult." And I told them, "You didn't know you could have just rolled out of bed today. Like that was an option, and shown up in your PJs and bad breath and funky hair." And they kind of looked at each other. And they're great. Like they may be here today, so I love you guys. I think they're on their honeymoon. Again, it's like another awkward thing I may have created. But you can kind of tell you're not sure how it went. Like, was that a good idea? Because Nadia had the thought in her head, and then she shared it in a sermon. She didn't share it with the couple on their wedding day. But we can see how, like, I'm in need of this God who keeps loving us, even amidst our fumbling, right? Like, doing the best we can with what we got, and a lot of times it's really not that great. So I want to just invite us to take a minute and consider what you think is not okay about you or your life today. What is it that you just don't feel that great about? You can close your eyes if you want, or consider what you're most not proud of today. It could be something you've done or doing. It could be a way you're stuck. Maybe a way you've been small or stingy with love. If you're more intellectual, maybe consider your doubts and questions. Maybe your suspicions that this God stuff, what if it's all just something we made up to help ourselves sleep a little better at night, to be a little less anxious? Or maybe it's just feeling that you've been in a desert, in a dry space spiritually for way too long, and you don't know how to find your way out. And the good news is that God most wants all of that right there. Like God's not intimidated by any of that. And as a community, that's what we're saying. Can we over time learn to bring those things into space, into light, in small ways, and see them healed? Because God finds it easy to accept us and to accept that about you. Unflinchingly smiles and welcomes all of the things, all of the things. I don't think we have an imagination for that. I don't think we really believe that, but that is what we're leaning into. So these are my questions for us as we're just reflecting. How is God inviting the mess of who I am into love? All of my questions, doubts, suspicions, addictions, smallness, all of it. And what are the parts of my life that need a home and community? And rather than trying to change anything, so what you just thought of, don't try to change it this week. Spend some time accepting it. It's there for a reason. See if you can be curious. And let's see what happens. Because I think when we do this, when we can actually do this kind of radical acceptance, we begin to see how rootedness invites us into friendship with God. It goes on, this is my invitation, that you remove the not, that you love one another as I've loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you respond to my invitation. You are my friends if you respond to my invitation, if you lay down your lives for one another. Friendship with God is connected with friendship with other people. It's defined as a deep, I've got your back kind of trust. And I don't know about you, but trust is kind of hard for me. I don't come by it easily. Sometimes I wish distrust was a virtue, because I'm awesome at that. But it's not. So if you're bad at trust, I was really kind of reflecting, okay, if God's inviting us to lean in and to trust not only God, but also each other, what are the questions that we might ask as a community? And the two that come up for me is, in order to really trust, I need time and information, if that makes sense. So these were the questions that kind of came up. How does one come to trust God and community in a meaningful way? So I'll never forget a couple years ago, once a year, we have a covenant member meeting for people who want to kind of lean in and do life. And I was kind of newer to the staff. And I'll have to say, too, I always get uncomfortable when communities talk about money. And I've been a minister for a really long time, but I'm just saying that's there for me. Even communities that are really safe and trustworthy. So we were at this covenant member meeting, and someone was asking Gideon. He said, Gideon, I've been in churches that expect you to give a certain percentage of your income. Does Vox expect this of me? And Gideon just said, well, we really just invite people to participate at the level that's meaningful to them. And then the person kind of said, okay, well, I hear you, but is that really true? You know what I mean? Do you really mean that? Because it's not comfortable for me right now to give anything. Is that okay? And I was kind of I'm on staff and I'm listening to this conversation. I'm like, oh, I really like this question. Is this just a strategy or are we really open-handed, right? And I'll never forget, Gideon just had this gentle smile. Without skipping a beat, he said, we trust you. And it will probably take time for you to really see that, to know if it's true. So take your time. And I thought, damn, I've never heard a community say that to people, because we trust you. Because it's not that we first loved or trusted God. It was God who initiated loving and having faith in us. God had faith in us first, began to trust us first. So hang out. Let that seep in for a minute. You are trustworthy. You're not perfect, right? You know that. I don't need to tell you. But you're worthy of trust and love. And as a community, we continuously seek to lead from a place of trust in a world that tells us to close our hearts and become full of suspicion and despair. Every time we process the events, like those in Pittsburgh last weekend and the yoga studio on Friday, I think it's natural just to want to shut down. To stay in bed. For me, Vox has become a space where I can come a bit wrecked with the latest tragedy and not find easy answers, because I suspect there aren't any. But somehow we're saying that we are capable as humans of profound darkness and violence, every one of us. And there is something worthy of trust in each of us. So let's see our darkness accepted into healing so we don't have to act out of it. And let's discover the seeds of what can be trusted in each of us. We trust you. So if you come to see Vox, over time, take your time as a space where you can start to receive your worthiness of trust from God in us, then you may, like me, wonder a second question, which has been, who is this community I'm invited to throw my lot in? What kind of vine is Vox? We expect each of our sense of faith and belief and intimacy with God to keep changing over time. We even see this is our in this little snapshot of Jesus' interactions with his students. Like they're moving from just being students to maturing into friendship. They're moving from this kind of one-directional relationship that's pretty projection-heavy. Like they're putting all their ideas of who they think the Messiah is, who they think Jesus is on him, without really getting to know him. But I think maybe around the campfires and on the long walks, they're beginning to actually see like, oh, okay. And as Jesus senses that, he says, you know what, I think we're ready to be friends now, not just my students. He says, this is my invitation that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you respond to my invitation. So maybe you've grown up in a positive church environment that makes it easy for you to trust God and community. And if that's the case, you're probably tired of me always talking about like church baggage. So I just want to honor that. That's like some people have had like really positive experiences. It hasn't been all negative. So I'm sorry that, you know, but because a lot of us, myself included, have some baggage, I do talk about that a lot. And I would say, regardless of whether you've had a generally positive experience or you've actually experienced spiritual pain, abuse, whatever those containers were, we are meant to keep growing beyond them, if that makes sense. And I think sometimes it's easy if your container was pretty terrible, be like, yep, I'm done with that. I think it's harder if it's really served you well. But I think over time, if we're honest, those things stop working for us. And then we're kind of seeking, okay, what is the next meaningful thing that might be in its place? So I came across, I have kind of just a picture of her book, Laura Swan, who talks about her journey a little bit into a monastic calling. And she wrote this really beautiful book called The Forgotten Desert Mothers, which is sayings, lives, and stories of early Christian women. And I find resonance with her journey of listening to the voices of non-dominant cultures. And I think this resonates with the type of vine that we seek to be. Like our community makes it possible for us to be in all kinds of different places and respect each other's inherent dignity and worthiness of love. I'm really proud of this about our community. But she talks about years of studying theology and then the wheels fall off for her. And so I'm going to just read a little bit of her journey. I came to know the desert intimately and all its painful stripping and intense silence. With time, as I learned to listen deep within, what had seemed barren was transformed into abundant simplicity. The deafening silence and the apparent absence of God revealed the idols I held dear. God yearned to strip away all my false gods so I might encounter the authentic I am. My interior journey was toward inner simplicity, toward fertile soil from whence my truest self might emerge. I was hardly prepared for the inner revolution that would result when I began to confront the possibility that my own experience had value and meaning. A lot of us have grown up in communities that have told us it's all crap. You can't trust any of it. Absolutes crashed down, certitudes faltered, and I questioned everything I believed. I began to discover my inner voice, to listen to my own values, desires, passions. I was invited to listen to my feelings, emotions, and inner stirrings for the wisdom they contain. I discovered freedom to stop hauling around the dead wood that had burdened me, the shoulds and the oughts, the quiet tyrant within that tells me I'm not good enough. I was beginning to discover that God's simple abundance is truly abundant. This is some of what the vine of our community is. I think it's a vine that's very meaningful to have in East Austin, because I think we need spaces where people can root and begin to see God as trustworthy, and to begin to see the ways in which we can be trustworthy together. So in many ways, though, and I'll kind of close with a story around this, I find trusting myself is harder than trusting a God I can't see. And so this might feel like a strange way to end this, but one of my greatest fears as a human being is that I'll mess my kids up as a parent. I also want to say, I know I share a lot of parent stories. It's not because I think parenting is more meaningful than not parenting. So we've got plenty of humans if you want to be a parent. I know that's complex in itself, but I don't share those. I just share them because we've all been raised by someone, even if it was wolves, which I was accused of once for another time. But this, in most recent years, is how God has shown up to me through this struggle to try to be a decent parent, I would say. And I would say about once a month, I have this question, like over 20 years, about once a month, I kind of wonder, should I be trusted, like with kids? Like, should I, like, was this a good idea, you know? Not because of my kids. Actually, like, if you ever need some hopefulness or worry about our future, like, hang out with one of our teens. Like, they're amazing. Like, I'm so proud of our teens and our community. And I have so much respect for you guys. Not that you're going to fix everything that we're breaking or anything. But just who you are in the world gives me hope. So I just want to thank you for existing. But more and more, as I see how flawed I am as a parent and how great our kids are, I am sure that what's so wonderful about them has more to do probably with nature than nurture. So recently, I thought it'd be great, because my daughter wanted to see this movie, Halloween. She's 14. I don't know. I thought, that sounds fun. How many of y'all have seen this movie, by the way? Anyway, okay. It's kind of scary, right? You can move off of the image. I think... So this is one of my moments, like, as we finish and she's, like, in a fetal ball in her chair, like, crushing my hand. I was like, I get up, kind of look around. Huh, it's all adults. Okay. All right. Maybe I am a bad parent. And every now and then, Jen, my wife, is also gets a little concerned about my influence on her kids. Because sometimes when we hang out and we talk, it's very snarky. It has a lot of edge. So recently, it was a morning, and Gracie and my daughter were in kind of a back and forth, and it was, you know, it was fun. I thought we were having fun. On the way to school, though, Jenna just kind of checked in, which I really appreciate, because you need feedback if this is your greatest fear. You need feedback loops. And she just checked in to make sure, like, Grace was okay with the way we were bantering. And she reported the conversation was something like this. Jenna asked, "So, hey, I know you and your dad are playful and sarcastic from time to time, and I just wanted to make sure you felt comfortable with that, because you can always let him know." And my daughter responded, "Dad? Dad? He's like the safest person on earth for me." And I know I'm not, but by the grace and healing of God, I'm safe enough. Does that make sense? Our community, our little community seeking friendship with God who has faith in us, Vox is not the safest community on earth. But we're safe enough because the ground of our being is a God embodied for us in Jesus who finds us easy to love, who is safe in just the ways we need for healing to happen and for our wholeness and our growth to unfurl. And so our invitation is to root together, to do life together. And this is a choice for us every week, to open our hearts and to trust amidst a world that shows us in so many ways that is foolish. But you know what? So often what we find foolish is the wisdom of God, actually. Please pray with me. God, I thank you that you are safe enough and that you can make us safe enough, even parents that don't know what they're doing. I thank you that none of our darkness or questions cause you to flinch. And how is this even possible? How is it possible that you can accept all of us? And how is it that you keep inviting us into love, even when we're like the worst sometimes? So with a full heart, I thank you for this little community that by most standards of logic makes no sense, probably shouldn't even be able to exist because we actually trust each other, or trying to anyway. Trust people and trust you in messy ways. I didn't even know people could. So thank you, thank you, thank you for the gift of being able to be here, being able to witness the little bud of God, of Vox's unfolding. And I ask all this in the beauty of the Father and the inviting love of the Son and the tenacity of the Holy Spirit. Amen.